All right, we're ready for Babel versus Smith. Mr. Domina.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please report, my name is Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Tom Babel, who initiated this action to determine the boundary line separating islands 3 and 5 near the Merrick County boundary, south end of Merrick County in the Platte River. The photograph, which appears before you, shows three locations that are germane to this case. On the left is island number 5, Mr. Babel's island. On the right is island number 3, the Schmidt Island. The stream of water labeled in the photograph and passing between the islands is the agreed upon thread of the stream of the Platte River. When Mr. Babel initiated this action, he was uncertain about whether there would be agreement about where the thread of the river was. When it became apparent that the appellees relied upon the doctrine of avulsion to establish their claim to a boundary, Mr. Babel dismissed his petition or complaint, and the case proceeded to trial on the counterclaim. That eliminated any doubt about who had the burden of proof in the court below. There were potentially conflicting burdens until that occurred because under Section 34301, one who seeks to establish a boundary has the burden of doing so, but under the doctrine of avulsion, one who asserts that an avulsive act changed a boundary has the burden of proof. So when the case proceeded to trial only on the counterclaim and the reliance of the counterclaimant on the doctrine of avulsion, the burdens of proof were both with the appellees here. In this case, Mr. Babel contends simply that there was no avulsive act proven. This court has looked at this doctrine several times in recent years, generally not publishing your opinions, but you have carefully and patiently and persistently adhered to the rule that an avulsive act must be proven with clear and direct evidence. And in this case, three witnesses are available whose testimony can be examined to see if there is any such evidence. One of the Schmidts testified. He didn't attempt to identify a date, a time, an event constituting an act of avulsion. A surveyor named Mr. Graves testified and gave two important and interesting pieces of testimony, one relevant to the outcome. Mr. Graves identified by survey the thread, the agreed upon thread of the stream of the river. It appears in Exhibit 43, depicted with a purple line. Mr. Graves also brought some interesting history to the equation in an attempt to reconcile surveys that appeared not to be reconcilable. The surveys are unimportant to the outcome because they don't prove an avulsive event. They don't infer an avulsive event, and therefore they're interesting survey evidence, but they're not germane to the outcome of the case. The other witness, the third witness who testified, was a geologist from the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. Mr. or Dr. Jockel testified that he took soil samples from each side of the agreed-upon thread of the stream, identified differences in soil types, and concluded that those differences in soil types are not necessarily consistent with either accretion or relixion, and therefore they must be more consistent with avulsion, so he inferred that perhaps maybe an avulsive event occurred. The professor could not identify an event, a year, a decade, anything that suggested when, where, what, or how avulsion occurred.
Was that his terminology? Maybe an avulsive event occurred?
When he was asked to identify when, where, or if he could say, he could not. He did not say maybe, he did say more probable than not that the geologic explanation would be an avulsive event. He was never asked to distinguish, Your Honor, between a geologist's event of avulsion, which might take decades, and the law's description of an avulsion, which is a sudden and perceptible event that causes a change in the course of the stream. So we're still left guessing.
Can you cite us to one or more cases in which an avulsive event is found and defined as such?
Found, no. Defined, yes.
Definitionally, the Anderson versus Cumston case, the Daggett Monument Farms case, the Skillicorn case, I can remember part of the citation is 100 Nebraska, all refer to the definition of an avulsive event. And they give us...
There doesn't seem to be any controversy about how one legally defines an avulsive event.
I can't see any change in the law since 1916, at least on that point.
The difficulty is we don't have a case in which the court found there was an avulsive event.
Well, we don't have, we do have an interesting legal issue that I don't think affects the outcome of this case, but would be interesting for the court to think about, and that is, what really is the burden of proof of a bullet? I cited in our brief some law that suggests that maybe it's a clear and convincing standard. Our court has said the evidence required is clear evidence, and it's hinted maybe it's clear and direct evidence, but the phrase we more commonly use is clear and convincing. So I argue for a clear and convincing standard in brief. I don't know that that reflects our precedent, but it is interesting that our precedent doesn't really say greater weight or preponderance on the one hand or clear and convincing on the other. But in either event, what's absent here is direct and positive proof. And it is clear from our precedents that the appellees to prevail had to bring forth direct and positive proof of a sudden and perceptible event constituting an avulsion. That much is clear from our law. They did not do that. The trial court seemed to believe that maybe the professor's theory of the geology might be more right than not, but even the trial court, in its opinion on page 28 of the transcript, says it could not identify any sudden or perceptible event that justified its awarding judgment in this case to the appellees. So for those reasons, we believe that reversal is in order and the judgment should be entered for Mr. Babel, finding that the boundary line is as set forth in Exhibit 43. In case it would help the court and the appellee, I'll leave that up. If the appellee doesn't want to interrupt, I'll invite them to take it down.
I do have a question on that. I haven't reviewed all of the exhibits in this case, but that's 59, I believe.
It is.
And it doesn't show us where the disputed property is, does it?
It doesn't have the labels on it I have there to assist you.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply the aerial photo, and it doesn't even show the directions. So all of the words on what I've displayed there for you are demonstrative for today.
Can you generally point us to, on this exhibit, where the disputed property is? I won't hold you to any exactness, but for my benefit?
I can, Your Honor. Island 5 is a large island that extends down the river a considerable distance. Mr. Babel's portion starts east-northeast of the farm portion. So what's in dispute is this area.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Again, I represent the heirs at law of Arthur Schmidt, the appellants in this action. Your Honors, the record in the case that the appellees, are the owners of what is Island 3 in the Platte River. They acquired that property when their uncle Arthur Schmidt died. And Charles Schmidt, or Chuck Schmidt, was appointed personal representative of the estate. Mr. Schmidt contacted the Merritt County surveyor to enlist his assistance in determining the boundaries of the property owned by Arthur Schmidt in and along the Platte River. And the county surveyor of Merritt County, Mr. Jim Graves, undertook to determine the extent of the boundaries of the Schmidt property, and in particular, Island 3 in the Platte River. Early on, Mr. Graves found that there was a discrepancy in the surveys between Hamilton County to the south side of the river and Merritt County to the north. And specifically, dealing with Island 3. Now, what Mr. Graves determined through his surveying work and his research of the GLO surveys, the plats, his contact with the state surveyor, and reviewing all the pertinent records in Merritt County, was that he determined the location of Island 3 and determined that the original meanders of Island 3 are now bisected by what is labeled as the main channel of the Pat River on the photograph that the court sees. So essentially the problem is this. Grace determined that part of the island lies now south of the channel of the river and part lies north. Now, Grace testified that that channel of the river bisecting the island is not shown or reflected in any of the GLO maps or surveys. His testimony was that he believed that channel either crossed a low section, either was a very small channel that wasn't noted in the original surveys, and that the channel widened over time, or that some type of convulsive event happened to cause that channel to cross the island. He made reference to surveying the width of the channel at the what would be the upstream end of Island 3. There were surveys done of that channel in 2001, at which time, in 1921, at which time that channel had a width of 138 feet. It's been surveyed again in 1932 and had a width of 250 feet. And in 2005, I think it was, when Mr. Grace surveyed it, that channel was now a width of 302 feet. So that channel that we contend bisects Island 3 obviously is growing and widening with the course of time.
Do you think that, is that widening? What kind of event is that?
Well, I think there's obviously something down upstream that has caused more water to flow and widen out the course of the river at that point. But the other important issue then is, well, what is the evidence to show that that portion of Island 3 on the south side of the channel, that that still exists? And was that part of Island 3 on the south side? And what I'm referring to, and this is a rough approximation, is partial dam in this area. Is that lands that have been lost by the appellees due to the effect of accretion, the channels suddenly moving northward and eroding away part of Island 3 and building up lands behind it? That would be an accretive event versus an avulsive event. And so we had Dr. Matt Jokel, a professor at UNL, who's a geologist, conduct some studies, and to do so, he dug three pits in that area. The first pit he dug was on the north side of the channel on Island 3, and he reviewed the soil profiles there at that location. He then dug a similar pit on what we contend is part of Island 3 on the south side of the channel and examined the soil profiles at that location. And his testimony is basically that both the profiles at both locations are similar to one another and that they reflect a single geologic event of soil being deposited at that location. In contrast, he dug a third pit, and this third pit would be further to the south in an area that was south of what we contend is the original Island 3. And in an area that was described by witnesses as clearly appeared to be accretion lands, south of the high banks of Island 3. And there, Dr. Jokel testified that the soil profiles in that location were considerably different than the first two, in that you had evidence of successive deposits of soil commonly known as accretion, where you have land slowly being built up over time and are now up and out of the water. So his testimony, although Dr. Jokel could not identify that that part of Island 3 south of the river, what caused that to be separated from the rest of Island 3, his description and testimony certainly indicates that that part of Island 3 that's south of the channel is accretive lands. There's accretive lands further south from the original meanders of Island 3, but within that area that Mr. Grace identified as being within the original meanders of Island 3, that land is not consistent with the accretive land further to the south. So we believe we've shown that an evulsive type of action occurred in that we've disproved that the river channel slowly moved from the south towards the north to its present location. And based on that, the case law is that when it's an evulsive event, the boundary does not change with the threat of the stream or the river. An evulsive event leaves the property boundary at the original location and not the new location of the threat of the stream. So based on that, Mr. Graves then surveyed the extent of both prepared a plat that showed the original meanders of Island 3, and then surveyed and gave his opinion as to the extent of the accretion grounds to Island 3 based upon his survey work. And again, Mr. Graves also was of the opinion that this land south of the channel of the river within the original meanders of the river was there and bisected by some event.
Let me interrupt you before you run out of time. I take it you agree with the exchange that Mr. Dahman and I had that while there's plenty of Nebraska case law defining an evulsive event, there isn't a case that says, okay, that was an evulsive event, right?
A case to that effect doesn't come to mind.
How about other jurisdictions? Do you know of any other cases that have not only defined what an evulsive event is, but have said this was an evulsive event?
Your Honor, there is a case that comes to mind, and it was a federal case. Sorry, I don't believe I cited it. I'm not sure that I cited it in my brief. But it was a case dealing with lands in the Mississippi River near St. Louis. And the evidence in that case was that an evulsive event had occurred, and it was visible. People testified as to actually seeing the water moving with such force that they could perceptibly see it eroding away and changing the course of the river.
Would you agree that if there's an evulsive event in this case, it had to occur between, I think, 1858 and the time of trial?
Actually, no, I wouldn't agree with that. I would agree that it had to have occurred between 1858, the original surveys, and 1921, when a survey was done of the upstream portion boundaries of Island 3.
So, okay, you've narrowed it down even further.
Yes.
So, what happened? You don't have any evidence of what happened.
It's difficult to find people who have a memory of events that occurred in the 1800s at this point. We have no direct evidence of the river suddenly changing its course. What we have is the testimony of Dr. Jokel regarding the soil profiles and the characteristics of the lands on the south side of the channel within the original meanders of Island 3.
Don't you think, tell me why your burden of proof doesn't include some sort of definition of the event, some evidence of what the event was.
All I can say, Your Honor, is I believe we've proven that by disproving the alternative of it being an accretive event. There's no evidence to indicate, you know, in fact, we've presented evidence to disprove an accretive event, and that being the testimony of Dr. Jokel.
It almost seems to me like his testimony is sort of like a doctor testifying while I examine this guy's neck and the x-rays and the CAT scans, and he had to have had a whiplash injury. I don't know when it was. Nobody knows when it was, but he had to have one because that's what's on the x-ray.
Well, again, what you have to distinguish is for the appellant to prevail, it can't have been an accretive event. And the definition of an accretive event is
an accretive event?
Yes.
Isn't it accretion, a gradual,
slowly movement of a channel?
Pretty hard for somebody to go out and watch accretion.
Pretty hard, Your Honor.
But it seems to me from the definition of avulsion that somebody could go watch avulsion.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. But, Your Honor, if the channel could move northward as a result of accretion and lands being built up behind the channel, then those lands being built up behind it as the channel moved north, the lands to the south of the channel would have had a different characteristic than the lands to the north. And they didn't.
Okay. I've taken you. Did anybody? More? Thank you.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Domina have more time? Okay. Mr. Domina? How much did we take over, Mr. Chandler? Give Mr. Domina an extra minute.
May it please the court.
We have lots of cases this morning.
I will be brief. If our nation endures, our state survives, and our law prevails, someday lawyers will stand before this tribunal and argue the question, since there is a witness who saw the avulsive event occur 40 years ago, should title move or has the statute of limitations run? We don't have that issue. We don't have proof of an avulsive event. Reversal is in order. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Case is submitted.